Okay, so I've had a hard day at work. I'm heading to a restaurant. I need something to eat. Out of the corner of my eye, someone hovers to my side. And I look at what I want. It's only when I look up that I realise it wasn't a person taking my order. It was a drone. This is not science fiction, my friends. It's a company in Singapore is pushing for this technology to be taken up. And will it take off elsewhere? We'll be joined now by Claire Porter, studio editor with The Guardian newspaper and a regular here on Tech Tuesday. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Waiter drones. Sounds, well, convenient.
It's good in theory, but what happens when you order something like soup or souffle, which like requires a degree of finesse when it comes to lowering the plate to your table? Might get a bit messy.
Ah, I never thought about that. And also all those people being put out of work.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure some of our unions might have something to say about that.
What do you think would hold back such technology taking off in Australia?
Legislation, occupational health and safety, industrial relations legislation. Take your pick.
But how about on the technology front? So you're talking about the political front, and you're right. I can imagine you're dead right. The union movement wouldn't be too impressed by drones delivering soup, even if they could do it without making a mess. But where's the technology at? Is it really something that is plausible?
Well, I think if you've seen any of the drone videos that make up YouTube at the moment, you can see some of the technical problems with drones. They're very loud. Their ability to not break seems to vary greatly depending on the degree of sophistication, not to mention accounting for human error. The number of videos that you can see of just people breaking stuff and hurting people accidentally with drones, I think they outnumber any sort of proper use cases. And I think particularly within the Australian context, you're going to need to look at things like who is legally allowed to and not allowed to own drones, and will you need to own a license? Will that be an extra business expense for Australian businesses? And at what point does owning a drone for delivery become financially beneficial as opposed to employing people?
Okay, so you've made it sound far too hard, Claire.
I think it's a couple of years down the line before we start to see full saturation. I mean, I just think there's a lot of issues that need to be worked out in regards to noise pollution and also, I guess, making them more durable and able to better last over the long term.
All right, let's move to this other story. New laws have been introduced in France which enable authorities to close down websites such as those run by Islamic extremists, child pornographers. Sounds like a good idea, but free speech advocates have pretty strong concerns. Where's the conflict here?
You cannot stop the internet. You can't roll it back.
Ban the internet!
Yeah, I mean, as much as, you know, I think the legislation is well-intentioned, but I think when you start to make threats of closing down websites, the only websites the French government, or indeed any government around the world, would be able to close down are those that sit on the public system. Now, most of the internet belongs to what's known as the dark web, which is the millions of web pages not currently being cached by Google or other search engines. And the minute you try to shut one website down, it will simply relocate to another one and go even further underground than the ones that already exist. So it's one of those stories that makes for a really great headline and screams, "We take law enforcement seriously." But when you actually look at the practical applications of executing such a takedown, I think you'll find it's a much harder task.
This has already been happening in Australia to some extent. I think a couple of years back, ASIC took down 1,000 sites. Can you tell us more about that?
I think it was more around the mark of the 50,000 website mark, but ASIC was trying to block access to fraudulent scam websites, but when they executed it, I guess the service they used couldn't tell the difference between an IP address and a URL, and inadvertently ended up blocking up to 50,000 websites, up to and including Melbourne University website, which was down, I think it was in enrollment week at the time where everyone would be looking for university applications. And it was revealed after that not only did ASIC not have the authority, there was actually no one offering any kind of oversight to ASIC. So they had nobody to report to and then nobody to consequently punish them for their actions. And I think it goes to demonstrate the weakness of internet law within Australia. Or, I mean, we've seen the appointment of an e-safety commissioner to try and speed up the complaints process for social networking, particularly for teenagers who are being bullied. But to the extent that the Australian government has the power to take down websites, it has that power, but it's somewhat informal, and the fact that it hasn't been legislated or been addressed by the jurisdiction and by the legal system itself, I think, should be cause for concern.
All right, on privacy. Today, Samsung has been in the headlines over alleged privacy concerns for its smart TVs. What's the concern here?
Well, I think it's more that the smarter your TV becomes, the more of your life is going to be cached within. You know, it used to be you switch on your TV and all it gives you was your TV. But now you can social network, you've got obviously access to the various streaming services or things like iTunes libraries. And as smart TVs try to encase all of our watching habits within the one portal, it becomes more and more vulnerable because it's storing things like credit card information and other information that could be used to potentially steal somebody's identity. But I think when it comes to smart TVs, as much as there may be cause for concern for Samsung, the thing that users need to realize is all of your devices, at least while you're at home, are connecting to the same internet connection. So if users want to better secure their communications being stored in their smart TV, they're better off installing some kind of protection at their modem or router level to ensure that any of the traffic coming in and going out of all of your devices is protected at the base level, not at the end user level.
People don't know this, do they, largely? There's a real weakness in the knowledge that people have about how to protect themselves.
I think a lot of people believe that if they have virus protection on their computer, that's as far as they need to go. I think a lot of people would probably be alarmed to discover that there's probably more of their personal information being stored on their mobile phones, for example, than even on their desktop computers. And yet, saturation for antivirus and other protection software on smartphones is really, really lacking. Because people don't think of their phones the same way as they do their computers, no. Even though they probably use them more regularly
that's
than
right.
Their own laptop.
It's alarming. Claire, well, thank you for going through that for Tech Tuesday. That's Claire Porter. That was Claire Porter, studio editor with The Guardian newspaper and a regular here on Tech Tuesday.